Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Welcome to the Vaporsmith's Freedom Hour with Freedom Fiends, Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Yeah.
No. Jesus, Jesus, what's it all about? Trying to clout these little ingrates into shape. When I was your age, all the lights went out. And even now part of me flies over Dresden and Angels 1-5. Despite the sarcasm, they'll never reckon it. Desperate memories fly.
You know that song?
No, it sounds to me like it's either Pink Floyd or Black Sabbath.
It's Pink Floyd. Amazing how you can, like, you've probably never heard the song, but, like, certain musicians have certain types of melodies.
Yeah,
you know?
They do. And certain types of lyrics. I know Pink Floyd has a lot of lyrics and a lot of songs about World War II and the horrors of it.
Yeah. Yeah, the last line of that song is, and the memory lingers on of the gunner's dying words on the intercom. It's all about, I mean, that album, The Final Cut, and to a lesser extent, The Wall. I mean, those two albums are pretty much Roger Waters' solo albums of him dealing with the death
right.
of his dad when he was
Well, wait, which album?
Okay,
so what album is the song you just sung from?
The Final Cut, which is even more than The Wall, a total solo record, and even, you know, with Pink Floyd backing him, but it's all his calling all the shots and writing every note. And it's all about the war, the whole record. And it's really one of my favorite Pink Floyd records. I think Animals is my favorite record, but, like, the sadder and darker and more cutting a Pink Floyd record, the more I like it. I don't really like their happy
stuff. Do
they
have any happy stuff?
Some of the Syd Barrett songs. I've got a bike, you can ride it if you like. It's got a basket, a bell that rings, and things that make it look good. I'd give it to you if I could, but I borrowed it. You're the kind of girl that fits in with my world. I'll give you anything, everything, if you want things.
Really? Those are the lyrics?
Yeah, they wrote some... So with Syd Barrett, they wrote some pop tunes that rivaled anything Paul McCartney and John Lennon ever wrote, man, and were similar. But, The Final Cut, man, really dark album. It's also, like, mixed in holographic audio, which the vinyl stereo sounds quadraphonic somehow. I don't know. On a stereo system.
Yeah, how does that work?
It's I don't know, but it's got, like, tricks with padding and stuff that just,
like,
you know, makes you feel like you're tripping.
Like phase shifting? Is that how they did it?
I don't know. Look it up. It's something weird that Pink Floyd... They were also the first band to tour with a quadraphonic sound system.
And that just means... kind of like before Dolby 5.1, there was quadraphonic after stereophonic? Okay.
Yeah. Which, you know, even with stereo live, you don't mix the whole thing stereo the way you would a record because people sitting on one side of the
are only going to hear one certain side. Yeah, that'd be pretty awful.
Really, stereo live sound reinforcement is generally used pretty much mono, and they'll use the stereo of it for an effect to just pan something like an airplane flying by or something.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
But Yeah, you complained about me clearing your throat. You don't know that I am muting the mixer. We're not recording what you're hearing.
Yeah, so yeah. Well, I hear it really loud. And when I was reading Mark Twain's War Prayer, well, I guess people haven't heard that yet. Well, you will in the future.
Well, you will. And that's why I was singing that Pink Floyd song. It's kind of a lead-in to 2 or 3 weeks from now. You'll hear Nima doing a one-act play reading The War Prayer by Mark Twain. But, I mean, really, like, you know, I was anti-war since I could see. But the Pink Floyd stuff that was about war really just kind of slayed me and reinforced it a lot. You know, Roger Waters, interestingly, the bass player, singer, and on the last five records, primary songwriter, Pink Floyd, he is pro-Palestine. And I don't know if he's anti-Israel, but he is definitely pro-Palestine, which is an unusual topic for a famous singer, you know, for a performer to take publicly. It's kind of the kiss of death in the entertainment industry, but he's really adamant.
And why is that? Why do you think it's the kiss of death? Say it. Say it.
Because people are so pro-Israel, because America is, you know, because Israel's our 51st state. Yeah. And, you know, England, too. I mean, England helped form Israel, and he's English. Roger Waters is.
I don't know. I feel like, you know, there's pro-Palestinian artists out there, I would imagine. I guess, but I'm probably thinking of underground rappers, people like Immortal Technique.
That aren't pasty white English gentlemen.
yeah.
Anybody else I could think of that's pro-Palestine publicly has a little brown in them, you know?
Yeah. I wonder what the Beastie Boys stance on it, because I would imagine the Beastie Boys would be pro at least to...
They're Jewish, man.
Just because you're Jewish. I mean, there are Jews for Palestine. I mean, you'd think... There is a group that
you'd think
like
that they'd be... You'd think they'd be for Palestine because they're for...
Free Tibet.
You know, and it's kind of the same deal, really. I think anyone who's free Tibet should be pro-Palestine, or at least not anti-Palestine.
If you're intellectually honest.
I don't know that I'm pro-Palestine, but I'm not anti. How's this? I'm not anti-Palestine, and I'm not pro-Israel. Is that neutral enough? I mean, that's not me trying to, like, step on eggshells. That's around eggshells. That's me just not knowing enough about everything. And really, it's hard to be for
exactly.
A
that's what know, I was just going to say. I'm not pro any state. You know, I don't want a two-state solution like people are asking for. I want a no-state solution.
But you know, Palestine and Israel, interestingly, are both more than states. I mean, Israel is a state of mind and a religion. You know, being Jewish is being more than it's a religion and a state and an ethnicity and a people. You know, whereas if you're American, it's just a state.
Right.
I guess it's a state of mind too. But being pro-Israel is being more than just pro the state in a lot of cases. And Palestine, I mean, is it even a country?
No, I mean, obviously not.
It's not a state. It's not a state that's recognized by every state in the UN. So therefore, it's not a state. So it's more of a state of mind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I suppose so. But you know, I guess it goes back to. Maybe it would be a good test case for panarchy, or as Mike Rozoff says, non-territorial, choose your own government. I mean, what do you need?
If you want a libertarian paradise, move to the Gaza Strip.
Well, obviously, it's not a test case yet, but maybe that it's something needs to change, right?
I like that.
Something needs to change, and some people are saying, well, it needs to be a two-state solution. People point to the demographics, the fact that if it was a one-state thing, you know, if Israel just keeps the way they're going right now, or tries to incorporate Palestinians into their society as full citizens instead of these, you know, people that they lock in ghettos, basically, then eventually the Palestinians would win out in the government if it was democratic, because there's more Palestinians, they have more babies, yada, yada, yada. So obviously either of those things don't work. So maybe this is a place where we could interject our ideas and say, well, look, you have this situation where there's these two groups of people that are fighting over what state controls this bit of territory. Maybe it'd be a good place to say, well, what if we thought about it not in a territorial sense of there needs to be one state that has a violent monopoly over this area, or there needs to be two states that share a violent monopoly over some areas like Jerusalem. Maybe it needs to be a non-territorial, non-state solution.
What's the noise out your window? Is that little Palestinian children playing below
Somalian
your window?
Little Somalian children playing below my window. Yes, they were.
Is it really?
I think so. We've got.
You should go ask them if they're libertarians, because you know if you want a libertarian paradise, you should move to Somalia. Where I think the new one is should be Palestine to the Gaza Strip.
There you go.
If you want to be able to carry guns and not pay taxes, move to the Gaza Strip.
Yeah, but.
Well, the thing about the two-state solution is all these solutions are posed by states other than the state that's being solutioned to. You know, I mean, even from a non-libertarian standpoint, even from a non-anarchist standpoint, just from a states have the right to exist if they want, you know, let's wrap around that lie for a minute, you know, which is what Israel's based on. Like that was one of the treaty things was, you know, Israel's right to exist will be respected. So if you're going to go by that, why do those states have to determine the state of the other state in question? Why does the – I mean, who proposed the two-state policy? Not Palestine.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedomfiends.com. That's why we're very upset about freedomfiends.cz. Freedomfiends.cz is a Liberty Media archive of Freedom Fiends material hosted in the Czech Republic. Freedomfiends.cz is outside the jurisdiction of the Watchers, who employ me, the Central Scrutinizer, to keep you from hearing things that might make you think. My fellow scrutinizers and I do not want you to visit freedomfiends.cz. Do not visit freedomfiends.cz.
I don't know. I mean, sometimes they push for it. I think Hamas has said something to the effect of, hey, you know, we'll...
Hey, you just triggered the Central Scrutinizer. You mentioned an organization that exists.
But, I mean, Hamas has basically said, you know, we'll go back to the 67 borders if there's, you know, we'll accept that. You know, we'll recognize Israel's right to exist and we'll even be peaceful about it if you recognize our right to exist. So, in a sense, that party has come to the table like that. And certain people in Israel have said similar things. I don't know on an official level or not. I mean, obviously not, because they're doing things like settlements and whatnot.
The two-state solution was proposed in 1936 by the Peel Commission, which was a British mandate for Palestine. Peel. So, wow. As I said, it was not one of the states being
there
discussed, of course.
So the two-state solution is older than Israel itself. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be damned.
Yeah, you know, if you search Palestine before Israel, search that term on YouTube, there are some stunning little mini documentaries of like what a beautiful and advanced place Palestine was before all that British interventionism and American interventionism that created Israel.
That's another good point to bring up.
It was they were advanced, man. They were advanced, you know. I mean, a lot of times like Americans think of America as the only country with any technology, and they forget that, like, you know, mathematics was invented in Iran, and you know, gunpowder and most technologies we use, and the printing press were invented in China. Yeah. Or paper was invented in China. Printing press was
German. That's the American exceptionalism, then, isn't it? It's we're exceptional because we'll go blow you up if you're starting to get too advanced. So we can be the most advanced.
Yeah, let me see what the Palestinians have come up with. Let's see. Art, cuisine, film, handicrafts, literature, and poetry. I don't see a listing for science, but yeah, they did stuff. They do stuff. They do stuff, but now they're, you know, they do stuff and it gets blown
up. Well, I mean, think about Iraq. It was the cradle of civilization. I mean, between the Tigris and Euphrates, Mesopotamia, right? Sort of where a lot of modern society stems from. And now it's a place where planes have to dive bomb the runway so they don't get blown up by an RPG.
I was really insulted when I showed a friend of mine the collateral murder video, which if y'all haven't seen it, go find it on the internet. It's the WikiLeaks thing. It's a bunch of, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old Americans in an airplane bombing innocent civilians.
I think it was
Iraq.
An Apache
it's
helicopter because
right?
they were floating
yeah.
there.
You can't see them. You can see what they're shooting at, and you can hear mm-hmm. them talking. And it sounds like dudes playing a video game, but they're killing people and getting yeah. excited about it. And one of the people they killed was an unarmed journalist that they, you know, they're like, I think that's an AK-47.
His camera and his tripod. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but I showed that to a friend of mine, and he's like, yeah, it's too bad that those people got killed, but they shouldn't have been in that neighborhood. And I'm like, they live in that neighborhood.
Yeah, we went there. What the hell? We shouldn't have been in that neighborhood. Not the people who live in the freaking neighborhood.
And, you know, every American that's like, we got to blow them people up. They're shooting at our troops over there. And I'm like, most of them are shooting at your troops because your troops are shooting at them. And I'm thinking, like, all the gun nut Americans, you know, what they would do if North Korea marched down the street and did to us what we're doing in the Middle East. They'd either surrender because they're pussies, or they'd go to full-on Red Dawn, which is what they should do. Yeah. You know?
Well, that's another bit about the American exceptionalism. We can't ever think of it in terms like that. We're somehow God-ordained or above the rest of the world in a sense of morality. So when we go invade a country, we're like, why are these people not lying down and submitting to us? We're exceptional after all. Isn't that right?
Does Hamas... okay, we're really getting into territory here of the central scrutinizer, but...
F the central scrutinizer in the a-hole.
Hamas is the government of the Gaza Strip.
Democratically elected as well.
Yeah. And, you know, they're considered a terrorist organization by America and 20 other countries. But, you know, aren't they, I mean, aren't they basically like the, you know, aren't they self-defense? I mean, they don't go out and destroy things that, or do they? I don't know.
Well,
you tell me.
I mean.
You're the brown guy.
The argument that, you know, on the Israeli side and the Israel lobby would bring up is, yeah, they shoot rockets into Israel every now and then. They'll just launch a bunch of rockets.
Really crappy homemade rockets. It's like a sewer tube full of, what do they use? Like a sewer tube full of gunpowder, no, fertilizer and something else. And then like they try to make a detonator out of, you know, a bullet and a nail on the end. And most of the time they
don't go off.
You
can't really co-sign that. I mean, and that's what happens when you get into a circle of violence or you collectivize violence. I mean, which is what war is. It's collectivized aggression, which I, of course, don't believe in and I don't think you can morally justify. So then it becomes sort of a chicken and the egg kind of thing. And it's like, well, you know, who's defending who? But obviously, if you look at the basic facts... to me,
well, I heard on Fox this week, I heard, you know, America killed five militants in a drone strike in Pakistan. And then like 2 minutes later, I heard a different pundit on the same network saying like, well, they were going after this one guy, but they killed five other people by mistake. And I'm like, wait, were they militants or were they, you know, I think it's like when they kill the wrong people, they just say, oh, they were militants. So that's the U.S.
Which how
solution.
Does that even morally jive in people's minds? I mean...
With bombs that are like, you know, micro-guided to the centimeter, not sewer tubes filled with fertilizer that fail to
Right, but what
launch.
Does that word even mean, militant or terrorist? I mean, if you train to shoot and you live in Afghanistan and you own an AK, they probably consider you a militant. Even if you haven't killed anybody or sworn an oath to kill Americans. I mean, I go out and train and shoot with my rifle. Does that make me a militant?
Apparently, if you're walking down the street with a camera that looks like a rifle, and the thing is, it's weird, you know, that's screwed up. One of the many things that screwed up about that guy, those people being killed in the collateral murder thing, other than that, they also opened fire on a guy shuffling his kids
in a
into
minivan,
his van. Just
a freaking
there.
Minivan. He's there to pick up his kids and take them away from the war zone. Yeah. And I think one of the soldiers in the helicopter says, I can't believe he brought his kids to a war zone. Or, well, you shouldn't have brought your kids to a war zone. You brought the war zone to the kids.
You should have brought a war zone to the kids. Yeah. But, you know, they killed that one guy that they thought was carrying an AK who even wasn't. But in that country, it is the law that you can carry an AK.
Yeah. Right.
You know? So it'd be like someone from North Korea coming over and killing Americans for being at the shooting range or something, you know, for practicing the Second Amendment.
In North Korea, we say you can't carry guns, so we're going to kill you in America. Yeah, which is another
Oh, we came up with a good one that we forgot to say. Somebody had an improvement on my joke about that drug that eats your skin away in Russia. What's the drug called?
Crocodile. Yeah.
Somebody improved my joke, and it was in Soviet Russia, drug consumes you.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, back rotating the globe back to the Middle East.
You're right. What happens when China does something like say the barefoot lawyer ends up getting extradited to America? Hillary Clinton lets him catch a ride on her plane, and he's over here, right? And the Chinese government still wants him. What happens when China flies a drone over American airspace and says, "Well, you know, he was in your territory. We blew him up." That's how drones work, right, America? You pioneered it.
And then America will send drones to China, and then China will turn them off through the back door they've installed in the chips that they sell our military. And that's not a joke. The military has been trying to shave off money and going for discount chips from China. And a certain percentage of them have been found to like not work or have back doors or not meet criteria or whatever.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Keep American death jobs American.
They took our bombs.
Yeah, I mean, you think that China isn't running a U.S. drone factory 24/7 now that one of ours crashed in Iran? What do you think Iran did with it? I think they gave it to China to reverse engineer.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, Ron Paul says it all the time, and he's right that you know what we do with these kinds of things is we push countries towards China because they're the other major power in the world. You know, Iran's going to start selling its oil to China and India. Screw Europe. Why does Iran need to sell its oil to a bunch of sissy, on-the-dole Europeans? They could just...
That all hate them and want to kill them when China will pay top dollar for it and not complain and doesn't, you know, have 24-hour news networks saying that their religion means they should be murdered.
Exactly. Exactly. We are just playing a game, or sorry, not we, but the government is playing a game that ends in nothing but horrible things. And, you know, I guess I'm sick of it, but more than anything, I'm sick of people thinking that it's a legitimate thing. Because there are still people that believe that. There are still people that do say something like, well, we need to bomb all the Iranians, or let's just nuke the whole Middle East, and then we won't have to worry about it.
Yeah. How would they nuke the whole Middle East without nuking Israel?
That's another good point. Yeah. How would Iran nuke Israel without killing all the Palestinians that they claim to love so much?
You know, it's kind of like wiping the eastern seaboard except for Connecticut off the map.
The thing is people don't even know geography. People can't find Iraq on a map. They probably can't find Israel on a map.
I don't know if I could find Israel on a map, but I could find the general area Israel's in on a map.
Yeah,
I could find it on a map because I know it's bigger than some of the things right next to it.
Only like Lebanon. Israel's like a little sliver. Like it's super tiny.
I know. I'm kidding.
Yeah. Anyway, F the statist, man.
Yeah, let's
all right. This file. I'm going to go kiss my wife a little bit.
All right, kiss her for me. No, I'm kidding.
Hi, I'm Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends podcast, and I'm excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape anywhere the nanny staters would wet their pants if I smoked.
Vaporsmiths.com is run by a liberty-loving entrepreneur, not some subsidized tax-eater conglomerate.
I'm Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends, and I love Vaporsmiths. I smoked 3 packs of tobacco cigarettes a day for decades, but now I'm only using Vaporsmiths. I love the flavors, I don't smell like smoke, and I save money, so I have more to spend on ammo and treats for my kitties.
Available in 4 strengths and 10 delicious flavors. Reds, Classics, Turkish, Menthol, Strawberry, Cherry, Vanilla, Coffee, Minty Mint, and Cloves. Go to Vaporsmiths.com. Use coupon code FREEDOMFIEND to get 25% off your order. This is a limited time offer. Vaporsmiths. At Vaporsmiths.com.
Tired of the false economy? Want to carry real money in a form that people will dig getting? Don't Tread on Meme now has Freedom Fiends and Guns and Weed silver dime cards. Collect all 4. Trade them with your friends. Freedom Fiends silver dime cards are also great for starting conversations with statists about liberty. Go to FreedomFiends.com today and click the link at the top that says silver dime cards. That's freedomfiends.com.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Have you been looking for a safe, scenic, and inspiring place to live free? We chose Wyoming. Wyoming is the home of Free State Wyoming and the personal choice of Boston Tea Party, as well as the setting of his book, Moulin LaBaye. Bring the family and stop by for the 2012 Free State Wyoming Jamboree for 4 days of camping, shooting, and barbecue. There'll be trading, hiking, a raffle, and plenty of activities for the kids. Admission is free for those under 18. Entrance and 4 days camping is $15. It's only $15 more for the barbecue and beer on Saturday. Visit freestatewyoming.org. There's even a one-day handgun course led by Boston. The handgun course is extra. The Jamboree is June 28th through July 1st in the beautiful Black Hills of Wyoming. Join us to explore our favorite area of the country and see if our choice might become your choice. That's freestatewyoming.org. See you there.
Rolling.
The Bad Touch.
The Bad Touch.
Is that the You and Me Baby Ain't Nothing But Mammals song?
Yeah, let's do it like they do it on the Discovery Channel song.
Brilliant, brilliant.
Indeed.
So I'm done talking about Hamas. I feel like I'm going to get droned.
You don't want to get droned.
I don't, man. I don't.
Speaking of drones, the governor of Virginia came out and praised the use of drones domestically and said, whatever it takes for law enforcement to be more efficient and better at their job. And he cited battlefield success as a good track record for using drones in America.
Ugh.
So yeah, it's slowly but surely, man. I mean, we've been talking about drones for a while. And if you thought back in the day they'll never use drones in America and they'll never weaponize drones in America, then you're tarded, because obviously this is how government works.
Yeah.
And I mean, you, police departments have them now. They fly over places in Texas.
Colleges have them. There's a college
in
one of the states around here, I think it's Montana, has a drone teaching program, and they have a non-weaponized spy drone, a small one, for teaching their class.
Wow.
And I'm not talking a model airplane. I'm talking a U.S. military drone.
Yeah. And as far as weaponizing them, you know, that county in Texas, Montgomery County, the same one who crashed their drone into their SWAT tank. Yeah. They've actually been talking about how, you know, eventually we're going to have non-lethal weapons on it. You know, beanbag shot out of a shotgun, basically.
Spray a big field of mace.
Yeah, things like that. So that's the next step. And then after that, it's going to be Hellfire missiles. You know, it's just obvious. Next time there's something like Waco, they're just going to missile the shit.
I want to look up Hellfire missile. They're interesting. They're not very long. They're 7 inches in diameter and 64 inches in length, and they cost $68,000. They're made by Lockheed Martin,
of course.
And let's see, what can they do?
Incinerate people in hellfire.
Yeah,
that's what they can do.
Oh, and there's a picture of Predator launching a Hellfire missile, and that's—I just realized—that's the picture we have behind us in the movie. I took that off Wikipedia.
Yes, it is,
and it's also the 404 page for Freedom Fiends has that. Says
yeah. Oh no, we've been droned.
Yeah.
There was a video game I used to play on Sega Genesis when I was young called Desert Strike, and in it you flew an Apache helicopter equipped with Hellfire missiles and got to launch them at various terrorists. But there was also a mission that was in Washington DC, and I'm pretty sure everybody who played that at least once went to the White House and just blew the shit out of it with Hellfire missiles. Same with the Washington Monument. Just because it's there, it's a video game, you can blow it up. You're going to try it at least once, right?
Okay, Hellfire is a backronym. They don't say it's a backronym, but it is. The name comes from the original intention as a helicopter-launched fire-and-forget weapon. Fire-and-forget.
What's a backronym?
It's where you say, well, you know, we've got this thing that's a fire and forget weapon, and it's launched from a helicopter. What cool word can we make up that uses some of that?
Okay.
It's an acronym made backwards.
Okay. Got it. Got it. Huh.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, fire and forget. That sounds evil. It's actually something about guidance. It's like, you know, it's not laser guided. You don't have to, you set the coordinates and fire it, and then it goes to its intended target.
Right. Right.
Than the old type where you'd have to laser guide it. Like you'd point a laser at the target while you fire it, and it would follow the laser to the point.
So you could fire it and then fly onto the next target, fire some more, and et cetera, until you've destroyed all the little babies in the Iraqi village.
It says it's for primarily for anti-armor use. And I'm thinking like, really? Really? It's used from drones to kill people in their houses and on the street. I don't see any armor there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they don't care about that. It does the job. There was this guy on my wife's Facebook who always posts these very pro-military things, and he's been on a kick lately about keeping women out of the infantry, which, you know, my stance on that is there should be no infantry. But in this article he linked to where this guy like basically broke down why he thinks women shouldn't be allowed in the infantry, he's like, He's addressing sort of some of the arguments, and one of the arguments is that's not fair. And his anti-argument for that is basically, yeah, well, the military's not fair. I remember when I was in Iraq, there was a guy shooting at us from far away with a rifle. We shot him with a tank and then bombed him with a plane. So that wasn't fair. That was his argument for keeping.
And this
women
guy
out
was
the
this guy was a soldier.
Yeah, yeah, former soldier, I think.
I'd say even as a soldier, even. From the belief that war is just, he's stupid. I mean, look at Israel. They let women, they conscript women and gays serve openly. And that one of the reasons they are such a tiny country with such a powerful military is they will take anybody. They take everybody. They don't care.
They force everybody. Like you said, they conscript.
But they, you know, I mean, really, like saying women shouldn't be in battle. If you are a soldier, that is a counterintuitive statement.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I try to always be able to think like the other guy. You don't like it. You're like, but that's immoral. No, war is unjust. But I have to go to be able to like convince everybody of every thought, of every kind of thinking. I have to be able to go, well, how would a soldier look at this? You know,
right, right. And you're probably right with that. I mean, that is important for you know, rhetoric is to be able to break down the other side.
I think that's what I was getting at. When I was finally anarchist, beyond minarchist and finally anarchist, but still wanted to talk about the Constitution, and you're like, well, the Constitution's immoral. And I'm like, well, yeah, but it's the law of the land, so we should know it and be able to speak it to people who believe it when they're oppressing us. And you're like, no, it's immoral. And I'm like, I'm a realist. You're you're living in some fantasy land.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think there is something to be said with knowing what you want, knowing what's wrong, and being able to tell people that. Because if you argue Constitution with somebody, I remember when I lived in Wyoming, there was this guy, oh man, what was his name? But he was one of those people that'll just rattle on to you all day long about stuff, and he called himself a constitutionalist, and he was all about the living Constitution, and he was a liberal and an Obama supporter, I'm presuming. And he loved the Constitution. But that's the thing about the Constitution is you can love it and you can respect it, and you can argue about it all day long. And at the same time, there's different interpretations of it. It's kind of
like the Bible. Occasionally, you know, I like to know it because I may be in court someday, and hopefully my lawyer will. I mean, that sounds ridiculous.
The
like
judges
trusting
don't
the judicial
give a
system.
Crap
no,
about
but some
constitutional
judges
arguments.
Do. Some judges do. Okay, an example. In Wyoming, when the terrorist guy wanted to come speak at the college, what's his name?
William
which
Ayer.
I was adamantly against, and I'm embarrassed about that. But he wanted to speak, and you know, they were like, well, he won't. You know, people pulled out their funding of the college, so they're like, he was going to speak somewhere else, and or speak at the college, and it wasn't going to be paid for by the college. It was paid for by an independent donor, probably. Who's the rich Jew industrialist that killed Nazis?
I don't know, man.
The guy the evil guy behind the curtain.
You George
know.
Soros?
Yeah, George Soros. I think he paid for it. But no, there was a Wyoming judge, a really conservative guy who heard the case like in one day. Like they had an emergency case for it. And he heard it and he says, I don't like this man. I don't like what he has to say, but the Constitution guarantees him the right to free speech. He will speak. Okay, occasionally you get a judge like that. And so Anyway, we're getting off the subject completely, if there ever was one. The subject that I was going to go for was in agreement with you. Okay, I will reiterate, it's good to know how to argue with people who aren't quite there or anywhere near there yet, because I think otherwise you lose opportunities to discuss with status and nudge them to
anarchy. It is, and there's something to be said for baby steps. But, you know, I kind of feel like, okay, so when Ron Paul, for instance, is on the Jon Stewart show or the Daily Show, and Jon Stewart says things, well, but the government will do this and the government will do that, and if you have a government, it's going to have to do such and such. And Ron Paul, his hands are tied because by the minarchist philosophy. He can't say something like, well, all government is force, and I believe in non-aggression, and so we can't have this happening because the root of that is you first had to steal money from people. Ron Paul can't say that because he's arguing on Jon Stewart's terms, Jon Stewart's statist terms.
Well, my two favorite statists are Ron Paul and Robin Kerner, and I told Robin that yesterday. I mean, Ron Paul, I think he's a great force for liberty. Ron Paul is also – his whole thing is being a strict constitutionalist. I mean, basically yeah. The reason he went into politics was he didn't like the fact that politicians didn't obey the law that they swore to obey. So he went into Congress, and everything he brings up is Constitution, 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 to the point where I think at this age he's learned enough that he's not even a constitutionalist in his heart. I think he's an anarchist. And as I've said, I think he will come out as that when he's out of politics. And by the way,
I think so too.
I booked Robin Kerner for another interview on November 7th, the day after the presidential election.
Okay. Nice.
I want to know how he feels then. And he said, I'm writing it down and it's booked and I will be very busy that day. And when MSNBC calls me, I'm going to say, well, we'll have to do it later because I'm talking to Michael Dean in the morning that day.
Wonderful.
But, you know, Ron Paul's whole thing is constitutionalism. I mean, even to the point of like really weird stuff. Like he said, you know, I liked his idea of, you know, you don't go in and invade the Middle East to find bin Laden. You send a team in and get bin Laden, which finally happened. But, you know,
when he was talking about letters of mark and reprisal.
Letters of mark, which are like of anything that's in the Constitution that even a constitutionalist should think that's something of a bygone era that needs to be looked at again. Letters of mark to me brings up like British Navy official legal piracy, you know, letters of mark. But that was his answer because it's in the Constitution. I mean,
I think it was timely. I mean, I think, you know, I'm not a Constitution humper. I'm not a statist. But if you do argue within that system, it would have been so much better to send a few guys to kill the few guys. Al-Qaeda was always a few hundred people in caves. Did we really need to send all of our sons and daughters over to godforsaken Afghanistan to occupy the frickin' country? Or did we just need to send Navy SEAL Team 6 or whatever from the get-go?
Right. Well, and Obama's praised for having done that. It was the only thing that made sense in the whole thing. And I think the thing was they had a whole agenda of, you know, taking over those countries, which they had to do first.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, that was obviously the real goal.
I mean, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Yeah, right.
Not only that, but despite the strategery, but war for war's sake. War for the war contractors in the military-industrial complex.
Generals gathered in their masses.
Yeah.
Yeah, you brought it back to Black Sabbath. Yeah. Exactly. And because,
you know, I'm putting reverb on.
You know, if you send Navy SEAL Team 6, then who's going to get the big contract? Halliburton's not going to have billions of dollars.
Well, I would say ostensibly, and this is something
stuff.
DJ brought this up, is that ostensibly Halliburton and Blackwater have letters of mark. They're just not official letters of mark.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose. But that's just one aspect of them gobbling up all the greedy government – or greedily gobbling up all the government money.
Greedily gobbling all the gold.
Greedily gobbling, yes.
Greedily gobbling all the gold.
Actually, the non-gold, but
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadavi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Yeah, so we have silver dime cards.
Speaking of real money. That's why you were accidentally saying gold. It wasn't an accident.
No, but here's what I was going to get at, which was actually something that about constitutions that actually like agrees with you. I went off on arguing devil's advocate for a while and then came back to this. Proof that constitutions don't guarantee rights. And this is a North Korea example, but you can't isolate them and say, oh, they're horrible, we're great. It's just a matter of degrees.
Matter of degrees. Mm-hmm.
The North Korean Constitution guarantees free speech.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so does ours.
And it's like
our Constitution guarantees that the right to keep and bear arms won't be infringed. But are they infringed? Yes.
Yeah, but you know, in North Korea, not only would they shoot us for doing a podcast like this and bill our families for the bullets, you can't even – most people there don't know what the internet is. No one can access it. And to get a phone line in your home, you have to get a permit and apply for it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah,
free
yeah,
speech.
Exactly. Writing words on pieces of paper does not guarantee that your rights are going to be respected. Free speech wasn't respected in America. I mean, World War I, they threw people in jail for not supporting the war. They threw people in jail for reading the Bill of Rights in public.
Robin Koerner is really interesting to me because he is a Brit who is in the process of getting United States citizenship to come here and fight for the Constitution. That's interesting to me.
That is interesting. And, you know, a lot of times there will be people who are foreigners who just are so in love with American freedom and this and that. And in some cases, maybe it is kind of the healthiest patient in the cancer ward, at least in some respects.
I don't know if it is anymore.
I don't know if it is anymore either, but I guess it's always a matter of degrees. And if you live in the slavery plantation where you get beat three times a day, maybe it's nice to go to the slavery plantation where you get beat two times a day.
I would actually opt for some of the Scandinavian countries where you can still own guns. I think they would probably be a more pleasant place to live right now. I mean, they have socialized medicine and high income taxes, but at least their socialized medicine works. Ours will never work. It won't. It won't. It can't work in America without being horrible. And I'm not fighting for socialized medicine by any means, but I'm saying that, like, you know, Norway and Sweden, those two might be freer places to live right now than America, and with better economies.
I haven't done any research on Norway or Sweden yet. So
and
maybe,
and you can own a gun there. I mean, a lot of those countries, the gun laws are probably comparable to the middle gun laws in America, not the worst, not the best. You know, like you can own a rifle and you can get a permit to carry a gun. You can't open carry and you don't have a mag restriction.
So they're kind of like Texas.
Yeah, they're kind of like Texas or Oklahoma.
Yeah. Okay.
You know?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I still think it goes back to why can't we have non-territorial government if you must have government? You pick and choose. Why can't it be an a la carte menu? I mean, everything else is moving towards non-territorial. We don't have a world. Technology has freed us from having to depend necessarily for a lot of things on geographical travel and the physical constraints of actually having to send each other mail. We can email, you know, of actually having to be in the room with a person to talk or do a business meeting. Do that all over the internet. Why do we still need territorial-based government?
Well, there is an interesting blueprint for a territorial-based minarchy of Mulan Labe, if anyone wants to read that. I mean, and they have their own, like, gold-encrypted money system that only works, you know, through computers that have a Wyoming-based IP address.
Yeah. But see, still even there, there's...
But in the end, in the end, to be free, they have to steal a nuke from the U.S. government and plant it in D.C.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that's pure fantasy. I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but that's a big if. The other big thing is, you know, there were people that left, that had to leave. Why can't you live wherever you want and still have the freedom that you deserve, the freedom that is your natural right? What if there were... I guess all the people that left wanted more statism. But, you know, in Moulin Labe, it was basically a minarchist thing. There's feasibly there could have been things that were...
It was a very fast incrementalism to minarchy, too. It was like governor gets elected and starts passing a bunch of freedom laws.
Yeah, yeah. Which... I don't even know if that could happen. I mean, I don't know if it could happen.
And as an anarchist, it's not my ultimate solution. But I'd kind of enjoy the ride if it did happen in Wyoming.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm against taxes, but I think I would be highly amused and wake up smiling every day to strap on my sidearm if open carry here wasn't mandated, but prevented you from paying taxes. And anybody who tried to use a fake gun on their hip to get away with not paying taxes would be charged with tax evasion. I would love that law. I would love that use of the law.
Yeah, it's a fun fantasy, but you can't change from top down. You can't change for good or bad. Well, I guess you can change from bad. But when you try to change things from the top down, you're going to fail in one sense or another. And, you know, other countries have tried this too. When the Shah was in power in Iran, he actually banned women from wearing the headdresses. So now you have all these liberals and conservatives freaking out about how Muslim countries treat their women. When the Shah was in power, you were banned from wearing headdresses, and there were women who wanted to wear that. So it's not a matter of what women are being forced to do, if they're being forced to not wear them or if they're being forced to wear them. The question is, why are women being forced in the first place? And it's that way with any issue you look at in the world. There should be no top-down
force. An interesting thing with Boston's – I mean, not to speak for him. I've invited him on this cast, Anarchy Gumbo, so he could come speak for himself anytime he wants. But the and there's a Robin Kerner interview coming out this Saturday on Anarchy Gumbo.
But
the thing about Boston's minarchy, it's interesting. I've talked with him. I've read his stuff. I've read forum posts. Basically, his idea is that everything could be outsourced to the free market, including, you know, national or regional defense.
Roads.
But – the other day, my friend Mike DeLuna made a thing that was an image of zombies, and it said roads.
Yeah,
because statists love to talk about roads. And DJ and I the other day were channel flipping on TV, and we stopped on Fox for a second. And like in the middle of this sentence, this guy in this roundtable is like, "Well, I mean, building roads and infrastructure does help the economy." And I muted it and clicked off it, and DJ went roads.
Yeah, me and my wife were driving out in the country the other day, and we saw people building roads, and they weren't with the government. It was like on a farm. It was just the farmer had a dump truck with some asphalt in it, building his own road. And I was like, "Look, wife, look, somebody's building a road. How are they doing it? Oh my God."
I was watching some English YouTube video the other day complaining about statism and how the state, saying how the state does, you know, all the stuff we believe, but they didn't cuss and they probably weren't huffing Jenkum while they did it and shooting crocodile. They were sipping Chardonnay. But they said something like, "Well, lollipop ladies are nice, but they don't really help the economy." And I'm like, "What's a lollipop lady? Do you know what it is?" I had to look it up.
A lollipop lady.
It's when they're doing road construction. It's the person. It's usually a woman, I guess, in England, but also in Wyoming.
That's holding the sign.
Holding the sign. It's shaped like a lollipop. It says stop. Yeah. Lollipop lady.
Lollipop lady. Oh, wow. That's a nice Britishism that I'd like to incorporate. Yeah. I'll even call the men that. How's that? We'll make it fair and equal for all the sexes.
So where were we? Let's go back to, let's see, rewind. Roads, statist, roads, government, cats.
The Moulin Labe idea, or the minarchist
idea. Oh, Boston's idea of minarchy. The one thing that he differs from us on is he believes that there's one thing and one thing only that would have to be sort of a state type thing, and it's police. And his idea of it, you know, it's not police that would bust you for weed. It's not police that would bust you for having too many rounds in your mag. You know, nothing nanny, but for real, you know, murder, theft, rape, aggression, any aggression. He says that the police would have to be a form of state, because otherwise, if, you know, let's say someone, you know, murdered your family and you send your private police force over to deal with him, and he says, "I don't recognize the authority of your private police force. Get off my property," and points a gun at them. It's an interesting thought, and I don't really have an alternate answer, but for someone as smart as him that's really thought out and read all the books and written the great books and gone through all the various things of it to come up with the one thing government would have to do is police.
What's to keep that same guy from saying the same thing to the state police? I don't understand how that would solve the problem of having the state. The guy could say the same thing to the state cops.
And people sometimes do.
And people do. So that doesn't solve the problem at all. To me, that's just a non sequitur.
There you go. I like it. So, Boston, come on and rebut, Boston. Come on the
there
show.
There you go. Well, the other thing about having a state police force, which is in essence a monopoly police force, is how do you keep it from growing? Eventually, it will metastasize into the same kind of state we have now. It's impossible for it not to. What are you going to do? Write it a constitution? Yeah, that works. The only way to prevent police forces from growing like that and becoming evil is to prevent them from being monopolies, to having a competition, to where if one police force starts to bust people for pot, then everybody stops paying them. People are like, well, why the hell am I going to buy such and such police force if they're going to go out and bust potheads? Maybe I like to smoke pot too.
What would happen if there was one police force that did bust people for nanny stuff like smoking pot, and there were a bunch of rich old people who wanted to pay them? Would you have your personal police force?
Yeah, my personal police force would protect me from them. Exactly.
Which which to the uninitiated, this conversation would sound like that sounds crazy and wouldn't work. You'd just have these warring police forces. But I'm like, what do we have now? We have a bunch of state thugs running around in masks with AR-15s, kicking in the wrong door and shooting grandma.
Yeah.
Or kicking in the quote unquote right door and kidnapping people for nonviolent things and ruining their lives and or killing them.
Right. The system doesn't work now. I don't think it's up to us to prove that our system would work better because the state does not work at all. I don't see any benefit.
Free the slaves, and then you figure out how to pick the cot.
Roland.
We haven't even touched our notes, man.
Who needs them?
I know. We freestyle and shit.
Yeah. Off the dizome.
Yeah. So we made some joke about there being LSD on some pages of Starving and Company of Beautiful Women. And Ben Stone and Kai and a few other people started a thread about licking pages of it and being disappointed.
Yeah, and you told him to actually lick the PDF file,
mm-hmm.
Which I tried, and it electrocuted me a little bit.
Worms. Yeah.
Maybe we should touch our notes more. Is that what you're trying to say?
Have our notes touch us in special places.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I did a post the other day. I can't find it right now, but it's something about how a lot of old punk rock and some reggae had a really common theme of like stand up and be counted or unite or the kids will have their say. But they never said what you were uniting for. You know, it was kind of like this lefty, it was like change, you know, like Obama's slogan. It was
collectivism for collectivism's sake.
Yeah. And, you know, I was at a lot of punk rock shows in the 80s where, you know, the singer of the band would be singing those songs and stick the mic out in the audience and 10 or 20 of us would gather around the mic and chant the chorus along with them. You know, the kids will have their say.
Yeah.
And I'm like, about what?
Well, that's why I'm glad hip hop sort of did away with a lot of that. Hip hop was all about me and bragging about how great I am, how much better I am at rapping than you or selling drugs and all this stuff. There was a great Yin Yang Twins song called By Myself, and it was, smoke by myself, drink by myself, when I can by my goddamn self. It was all about doing by yourself. Who the needs somebody else?
How do you by yourself?
I guess he means not running a train, you know, not like Wheezy and Baby.
Or
I
not
like
have
him in the ass while you beat up the pussy kind of
or
thing.
Or not having to go like out with the boys to meet him. You know?
Yeah. That was basically it. Part of the idea in the song too was so you can't get snitched on. You know, do your dirt by yourself, so there's nobody to tell the police about it.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And so that's one of the reasons I've always loved hip hop is it's so, and that's one of the reasons I think it sort of reinforced my individualism, because why do I need to worry about somebody else? And it's not all hip hop, you know, sometimes they're always like, throw your hood up, throw your set up, what flag you claiming, all that kind of stuff. That's not my bad.
We need an anarcho-capitalist gang symbol. Although it's kind of
it'll be a single middle finger that you point always in the direction of Washington, D.C., wherever you're at. Kind of like how Muslims pray to Mecca.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Yeah. Or if you're in Wyoming, it points at Cheyenne.
Yeah. Man, I'm looking at Cheyenne, which I call Denver North. Or
yeah.
North Denver.
I call it. I made that up.
Did you? Oh, whatever. Yep. Fiend speaks collective. I can take credit for it.
It is collective. And we have Fiends, Freedom Fiends silver dime cards that have actual money, and they're a good way to start conversations with statists, as the ad will tell you. But yeah, go on freedomfiends.com and go to the link at the top of the page that says dime cards.
Yeah. Speaking of that ad, it sounded so much better in stereo than it did in mono. And I think it's because I used electric piano, which was a stereo spread.
Yeah, and, which has kind of a vibrato reverb built into electric piano.
Yeah, exactly. And I really wanted to try electric piano, and it sounded really cool to me when it was stereo because it had that stereo vibrato. But it was kind of whiny when it was mono. Although I think the ad is still good. Yeah,
it's still good. So I finally found this post I did about the punk rock songs that all say stand up, because I made a list of them and put it on Facebook. It took me a long time to get to it because I had to scroll through about 495 birthday wishes on my non-birthday.
A very merry unbirthday to you, Michael.
Yeah. But,
that's what I should have posted.
Okay, Minor Threat song, Stand Up. The Filaments, Punk Unity. The Sick, Bring It On. SSD Control, The Kids Will Have Their Say. Black Flag, Rise Above. And there was a reggae one I had in here too. It was that Jewish reggae band, Matsyahu. Do you know them?
Matsyahu.
Yeah. They're great. But it's
I don't think it's a band. I thought it was just one guy who's like a Hasidic Jew that sings reggae.
Well, he has a band backing him, but yeah, he's the star.
Yeah.
And he has this song called Youth, which is like, stand up, the youth will have their say, or something like that in the chorus. And somebody, and I said, like, you know, and they don't say what they're standing up for. And somebody posted, well, isn't it obvious he's saying the thing to stand up for is the state of Israel?
Yeah. Although, okay, so with some of that, I can see there maybe being something to say for choosing your own collective. I mean, when I talk about non-territorial organization, you know, there's something to be said for that. Choosing who you associate with, you know, freedom of association, picking your own people that you get your information from, or you get your community aspects from.
I think it's funny on Facebook when you start a page for an organization, you know, like a band or a company or something.
Like a fan page.
A podcast, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a drop-down menu of, like, type of organization. And one of the types is NGO, non-governmental organization, which is usually something that's actually intertwined with the government.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, like any of those various UN spinoffs are non-governmental organizations.
Right.
But it's kind of funny. A lot of anarchists use that, non-governmental organization.
Nice. Is there an anti-governmental organization?
How about an extra government organization?
There you go.
Nothing to do with them.
Yeah, I don't want
and
nothing
I,
to
which
do with
I
them.
Go back to the, you know, the thing I liked about 80s punk rock when I was in DC and watching Minor Threat play Stand Up live and chanting in the mic along with 20 other people with Ian, the other Ian, not Ian Freeman, Ian MacKay. You know, the thing I liked about that was an attitude they had, and he said in my movie DIY or Die, Ian MacKay said, you know, it's not that we were like anti-major label. It's like we were outside of that system. We had nothing to do with it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Which is, yeah, that's a really great concept. I mean, that's what we want, right? I mean, that's what agorism is. We want to stand outside of the system because we don't buy the system's BS.
I mean, if, you know, they always say, and we've said this before, you know, when rednecks say, if you don't like America, leave it. I would love to leave it if I could leave it on the property I'm on right now.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I want it to leave me.
I don't even care if it's still there, just as long as it doesn't poke me, you know?
Yeah.
And I would even go with a minarchist solution to that. If I could you know, pay a one-time fee like you have to when you leave America, even if it was steep, if I could pay that one-time fee and stay where I am, I'd do it. You know, yeah, but although they'd probably cut off your water and your power because they own them.
Exactly. That's the fantasy, which sounds nice and flowery. But I mean, it's like the bully at school. The bully would say, "Yeah, you can pay me all your lunch money for the next week, and then I won't bully you for the rest of the year." But he's not going to do that. He's going to realize, "Hey, this is a cash cow for me. I'm going to harass you as long as I get my money." Because the bully has no honor, just like the state has no honor. It could say something like, "Yeah, sure, pay us a one-time fee. Here, we'll make it, you know, a 1 year salary, and then we won't harass you for the rest of the time." But why would you trust the state? The state is notorious for being a lie.
I wonder if they offered that, what percentage of America would take them up on it? I'll bet it's upwards of 5%. It would probably be 10 or 20% that would want to, but 15% would realize it's a ruse. But, you know, let's say it wasn't a ruse. Let's say there was some way you could guarantee it, which you couldn't because you don't have drones.
You couldn't. But, yeah. That's the problem.
You know, but I'm wondering what percentage of America would want to pay to opt out and stay where they are. It wouldn't just be anarchists, minarchists, constitutionalists. You know, a lot of liberals would want to do that. They'd be like, "Hey, I live in a state where they're trying to outlaw abortion. I'm going to opt out so I can have an abortion here." Or, you know, "I live in a state where I want to be able to smoke pot and I can't." You know, like, there would be a lot of people who would opt out who are so disgusted that they would.
Yeah, I would hope so. Which is also why I don't think the state would ever even offer something like that, because then you'd give people an out. They'd start to think of the reasons why they wouldn't want to be in.
I think there'd be a mass exodus.
I would hope there would be. And I mean, I fantasize about but I'm an optimist.
It goes back to that thing we talked about with a political solution. You're never going to be happy. There's no voter that's 100% or even 50% happy.
Yeah.
If they have strong opinions, they're never going to be happy, because there's always someone else pushing the votes the other way to get the other people happy, to get their special interest protected with guns.
Right.
You know, I think a lot of people would opt out if they could, and not just in America, anywhere, except North Korea, because they're all brainwashed from birth.
Well, that's why the state wouldn't do that, because the state is, in essence, North Korea, just a matter of degrees less in most areas.
Yeah, that state shoots you if you try to go.
If you try to opt out, like East Germany.
No, not even opt
out,
just if you try to go there.
Yeah.
You can subscribe to Freedom Fiends via the RSS link on the top right of any page. It's orange and marked follow. Or you can subscribe via email at the subscribe by email link at the top of the right sidebar on any page. It's a little bit below the search field. You'll need to respond to a one-time confirmation email, but after that, you will only receive an email each time a new episode posts. The Freedom Fiends respect your privacy. We will not spam you and will not sell, rent, or share your email address. And you are free to unsubscribe at any time.
So, right. The Berlin Wall.
What about it? Yeah, I mean, that's another horrible example of a government not letting people opt out. You mentioned you wanted to do like a whole cast on it because of all the important things to talk about. Do you want to give us a little taste of that?
Yeah, I'll give you a teaser. I'm not ready until we both research it more, but I've seen it in person. I was in Germany on reunification day. Part of the wall was already down. People were freely going from east to west.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weirdly symbolic to me, because it was a physical wall in a real location in the Western world in my lifetime that prevented free travel.
Yeah.
You know, it split families. And I mean, it went up like overnight practically. And it went up. At first, it wasn't a very thorough wall and people could jump it. And, you know, then they put in the double wall and the razor tape and the landmines and the German shepherds and the guys with machine guns. Mm. But before that, and this is America's fault. I mean, you can't say America didn't have a big hand in that thing going up.
And Britain. I mean, yeah. Read Pat Buchanan's The Unnecessary War. Hitler didn't want to go east.
Okay, you have to qualify, because you just recommended Pat Buchanan. But so, you know, even a stop clock is right once a year.
Well, Pat Buchanan's pretty good on foreign policy and history issues in most things. I mean, Pat Buchanan's anti-war. So you gotta – I don't know if you gotta, but it's very helpful.
Doesn't he want Christian Sharia, though, and didn't he run for office?
maybe he's got sort of a white is right kind of attitude a lot of times. You think there's something exceptional about, you know, traditional Christian white American culture. So there is that. But
well, he was a senior advisor to Nixon, Ford, and Reagan. So give there's a pile of salt to take that grain with.
That's true. And he does it. The reason he's anti-war is because he doesn't think it's in the self-interest of Western culture.
Yeah, it's not a moral thing. It's like, why bother? It wastes money and doesn't advance anything of America's greatness.
Exactly. So it's from an effective thing. But he makes the argument in The Unnecessary War that Hitler didn't want to conquer Western Europe. He wanted to reclaim parts of Germany that had been taken from them in the Treaty of Versailles. And so by allying ourselves with – well, first Britain gave Poland a war guarantee, which was just ridiculous. How the hell is Britain going to teleport themselves to Poland to defend Poland from the Germans? It was not possible without causing a horrible situation, which it ended up doing. And also America allying itself with Stalin, with the Soviets. I mean, they called him Uncle Joe. He was one of FDR's good buddies and basically cutting a deal with them.
Yeah, FDR, the hero of all the neoliberals.
Yeah, he is in a lot of ways directly responsible for East Berlin and for Poland and most of Eastern Europe being under the boot.
I'd say for the Holocaust. I'd say he's responsible for the Holocaust because he refused to let Jews emigrate here who wanted to at the initial rumblings of World War II.
Well, I wouldn't say that makes him responsible for the Holocaust, but he could have done things to keep it from being so bad.
Yeah, there you go. All right. I'm just reading about Pat Buchanan, and he's sort of a Holocaust denier, and I'm like, I don't want to be that. So I had to chime in with a, you know, blame it on the government. But
well, yeah, I'm not saying that I'm a Buchananite, but I am saying that Buchanan makes some good arguments that are that both show how unnecessary World War II was, how it was blundered, how the Treaty of Versailles sort of caused it, and also obviously how our alliance with the Soviet Union cause a lot of the horrible things that happened in communist Eastern Europe.
So another thing about the Holocaust, before we get back to this other thing, is, you know, I don't doubt that 6 million Jews were killed, but actually, wasn't it more like 6 million Jews were killed, but wasn't it more like 20 million people were killed? You know, Jews, homosexuals, intellectuals, other religious denominations, people that didn't like the state, a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, yeah. A ton of people. But, you know, Stalin killed 20 million of his own people, too.
Yeah.
People who didn't believe in the communist idea.
Didn't Mao kill like 200 million or more than that?
Some of the estimates I've heard around 50 million, but maybe more. I mean, who knows? Because a lot of the people were just, you know,
they weren't keeping
evaporated.
Records. They were just shoveling them into pits and burning them.
Yeah, they weren't even treated like people. I mean, it's really hard to quantify.
Which also, anybody who says, you know, any child who doesn't understand how the world works and says, communism is great. No, communism is where they kill you if you can't produce something. You know, the original idea of communism, the Lenin idea of communism was basically, you know, peaceful and, hey, let's share everything at the barrel of a gun. But that's not how it turned out when Marx got a hold of it. It was, you know, it was let's kill people who aren't going to go with our glorious revolution.
You got that backwards, though. Marx's idea, but Lenin's implementation.
Sorry, I'm authoring DVDs. You're right. I know that. Yeah. 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 Marx was the fat old wise pig in Animal Farm, and Lenin was the pig called Napoleon who destroyed everyone.
Yeah.
Two I mean, the original bad, four Marx legs wanted good. Marx wanted a stateless society. Marx was kind of an anarchist.
Yeah, and that kind of boggles my mind because what ended up happening with communism is you had the most state in society that you had ever had up to that point in history. Now, I guess the idea was you have to force humanity into this sort of idea of a new socialist man, and then you won't have to have a stateless society. But I also think that their definition of state was a little bit different than ours.
Yeah, it was a worker union. It was a union, basically.
Right. Because whereas we define state as, you know, the aggressive use of force to organize society, I don't think that's the same definition Marx had. Marx was anti, you know, having a class system where he thought the producers exploited the workers. And so I can kind of see how they thought that this kind of state, the kind of socialist state that they were creating, at least under Lenin, was going to prevent that. Of course, you've seen the results. We've all seen the results. And there's another good point about that is, remember when we were talking about Enemy at the Gates? There's a scene in it where, you know, the Russian propagandist who is, you know, the one who originally has the idea to elevate the sniper up to the level and have a big PR campaign about how great this sniper is. There's this moment where he looks at him and he's kind of forlorn because the girl in the movie loves the sniper instead of loving him. And he says, you know, the thing about this socialist idea is, you know, we tried to take away jealousy and make everybody equal through economic means. But no matter what you do, even if we're all equal economically, there'll still be cause for envy. There are some that'll still be rich in gifts, rich in love, and some that are poor in gifts.
I know that so well. I mean, I'm thinking of a lot of people in San Francisco. It was like I was broke and starving and drug-addled, and a lot of my broke, starving, drug-addled friends – kind of hated me and did stuff behind my back because I was in a popular band, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Even if you made everybody – if you gave everybody the same wage, everybody the same job or you know, made everybody as equal as the state can make it, you're never going to make everybody look exactly the same. You're never going to make everybody have the same level of talent. It's impossible. The government will never reach this egalitarian idea that they have wet dreams about. It's impossible. Humans are diverse. Humanity is different. We're all unique, and that's something to be celebrated, not something to be stomped out with a jackboot.
Wow. Passion, man.
Check out the Anarchy Gumbo podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night. The Anarchy Gumbo podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com.
So, the Berlin Wall. Some people escaped from the Berlin Wall. They actually built tunnels. One guy stole a tank. Right? He's actually in the
Eastern.
He stole
a killdozer?
No, he was in the army. He just stole one of his army's tanks and drove through the barricades. A group of students built a tunnel, and some of them got out and some of them got killed when they discovered them getting out. A couple of people ran through. A lot of people tried to run through and got killed or got blown up with landmines. Some guy built a hang glider and glided out.
It sounds like something from a Simpsons episode.
Yeah, and when they first put the thing up, they didn't really have it, as I said, that thorough. And some people, like part of the Berlin Wall was like apartment buildings. You know, they would build the wall up to one side and the other side of it, and people just jumped out second and third story windows of their apartments when they saw it going up. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I would. I mean, I would always run away from the state whenever I can.
So I just got the new Fiends dime, the final, like, this is what's going out being sold, and I'm sending you a JPEG of it.
Yeah.
Yay.
There we go. Some nice horizontal liberation for that ass. Roland, so did you have a good pee-pee kitty?
Yeah, I'm listening to We Are the Road Crew by Motorhead, because someone just sent me this thing. It's my friend Eric that used to be in the Israeli army just sent me this thing. He thought it was really funny, and I did too. It was for an ad for a startup company in San Francisco called Bandango, which is not a like MP3 sharing site. It's a site that's like unionizing roadies for garage bands and trying to get startup venture capital. I'm like, wow. Only in San Francisco can they do that. Roadie is your roommate who doesn't pay the rent, who you say, look, we're taking you on tour. And he's like, okay.
Yeah.
Pee-pee kitty.
Pee-pee kitty. Yeah, you told me before we broke that you had to go pee-pee kitty. And I was like, why do you say kitty at the end of that?
It goes back from, okay, I dated this girl, I mentioned her before, Marie, who was Swiss and spoke French in San Francisco, although her dad was Italian, so she was very multicultural and very pretty. But she, the word for, okay, in France, the word for American coffee, they call it cat pee because it sucks.
Okay.
You know, typical French, I mean, but... And the French word for cat pee is pee pee kitty, you know, because the adjective and the noun are switched. Uh-huh. So it's cat pee. It's pee pee kitty is French for cat pee. And I pee a lot, and she called me kitty, which all my girlfriends had called me for some reason. So she heard a joke name for me was the pee pee kitty.
So now you go pee pee kitty.
And I still say it all the time. I say it to DJ. I'm like, I got to go pee pee kitty. and then DJ will, from the other room, she'll mew. Like if I'm standing there trying to pee, especially if we're driving and I'm trying to pee in a cup, which I do so we don't have to stop. You know, it takes a while to pee in a cup while you're driving. And then once I start peeing, she'll go, mew.
It's a nice completion. Mew.
Mew.
Yes, that resolves the pee.
Yeah. Or, you know, if I get up in the middle of the night and she hears me, you know, and goes, hello, or she goes, mew, because she hears a noise in the night, but it's me. You know, to reassure her, I'll go, pee-pee kitty, because I'm going pee-pee kitty.
Nice. I had a cat, our cat Flockin, when he was a kitten. I used to pee, and he'd love to go in the bathroom, and he'd look at my pee, and he'd try to sniff it, and he'd get a face full of piss. And it wouldn't bug him. He'd just be like, oh, what's this all over my face?
Kinky.
Yeah, I guess.
Our cats all come in and watch us pee. Do they? Your cats do that?
Yeah. In fact,
we say they're guarding us while we pee.
Well, see, my thing is they have a captive audience, especially when I'm taking a dump. Whenever I used to have my morning ritual, all of my cats come up to me and they'll like rub up against my leg and purr. And it's because that's the only time when I can't chase them to grab them and cuddle them, because they know all I can do is pet them. And if they need to leave, they can leave and I won't chase them.
So speaking of taking a dump, here's a police information headline. Deerfield employees can earn $100 for reporting crime. So this is some city. I can look it up, actually. Deerfield. Anyway, it's a city where the police aren't getting enough collars to justify their existence to the taxpayers. So they're taking tax money and paying it to city employees for $100 for every crime they report.
Oh, my God. Wow, so they're literally paying you to snitch. So we're here saying stop snitching, and they're saying, hey, snitch, and we'll give you $100. Wow. Yep. Yeah, that's awful, man. It reminds me of, in 1984, the junior spies, how they would set up this culture of snitching on each other for the benefit of the state. And that's really what they want, because, like we've said a million times before, they don't have enough resources to make everybody an enforcer. So what they do is they just create a culture where people enforce the law or the state horizontally.
Isn't that what D.A.R.E. does?
Yeah, that's totally what D.A.R.E. does. And where I live, they have what's it called? The Volunteers in Police Service, the VIPS program. And it's for people who – they're generally retired, or they don't have anything better to do with their life, or they're on the dole. And so they spend their time doing the extra work so that the cops don't have to do it.
So this is in Florida. As if Florida doesn't have enough real crime. They have to, like
– Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever see the Death Clock, where Nathan Explosion, the singer in Death Clock, becomes the governor of Florida?
Yeah.
And like it degenerates into chaos and violence within like a month. I mean, the first thing he does is like – they're like, Governor, Your Honor, we have a problem with unemployment. People are – they don't have enough money. And he prints a bunch of money, a bunch of Florida state money. It's $666 bills with his face on them.
Nice.
Yeah, and it's like Florida is one of the most armed and trigger-happy states there is, and that kind of comes to a head in this show.
I love metal.
There's like bullets coming through the walls of the gubernatorial mansion.
Nice. I've never been to Florida. Have you ever been?
Yeah, my brother lives in Fort Lauderdale. I've been there a bunch. Yeah. It's horrid. It's sticky. It's hot. I was there on Christmas, and it was like 78 degrees and 112% humidity, man. It was horrible.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's kind of what Houston's like. I grew up in Houston, and it's pretty sticky and hot.
Florida's like Houston without the culture.
Houston has culture?
Which I've said that about Phoenix. Phoenix is like L.A. without the culture, and people always say...
LA has culture? Yeah.
LA has the culture of the world, man. LA programs the world. It's not good culture, but it's strong culture.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose. Although I've heard tell that other countries are starting to they're not as into American media, you know, music, rock stars, movies as they used to be.
I'll tell you why. Because it's gotten cheaper to produce it to where it doesn't have to be made by a multinational corporation based in Los Angeles or New York.
Yeah, yeah. That's one thing. You know? There's a guy who writes on Lou Rockwell. He calls himself Mike in Tokyo, and he lives in Japan. And he has this anecdote where he was at a bar, and one of the older bar owners was complaining about how modern Japanese kids just they're so insular. They're not into American culture anymore. They just want to listen to their Japanese pop bands. And he goes on to cite some statistics about how American bands can't really sell out the Tokyo Dome anymore. But local Japanese pop acts will sell out the Tokyo Dome, for multiple nights in 1 week.
It used to be the benchmark of an American act of when they hit their pinnacle, they would record an album live at Budokan. The Beatles did it. Bob Dylan did it. Cheap Trick did it. You know, you'd sell out the Budokan and you'd do a live album. That's like what you did at your peak.
Ah, huh. Yeah, I didn't
know. I sent you the Fiends card. Did you see it?
Let me pull it up.
By the way, while you're pulling that up, I have a complaint that could help anybody if they design a website for a local or state newspaper anywhere. Put the name of the city, put the name of the state somewhere near the top of the website. People put out newspapers and it's like, yeah, Deerfield employees claim that. And I'm reading the whole article and going like, where is Deerfield? And you can't find it without clicking a bunch on their website. And it's like, come on, man, the internet is global. All right. Yeah. Say what state you're in.
Yeah.
You statists. If you're going to be statists, at least say what state you're in.
Yeah. Usually you have to figure it out by the name of the company. Like at the bottom, it says South Florida Sun Sentinel. So, but you don't get that until at the very bottom where it says copyright 2010 or 2012 South Florida Sun Sentinel.
Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. When you're not busy spying on your neighbors or squinting at everyone, tell anyone who will listen why more government is a good thing. You'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling demanding more taxes and arguing in favor of gun control while militarizing our police, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
That is so square. Check out the additional Freedom Fiends show, Freedom Fiends Live, every Sunday on the LRN.FM streaming feed or satellite radio.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker inside a mountain near an undisclosed location in the rural Wild West of the occupied states of America.
Freedom Fiends Live expands on the Fiends' weekly Wednesday podcasts, but now we're kicking the hornet's nest live. Talk back to the back talkers every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. From the makers of Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, Freedom Fiends Live. Call in soon before we get droned. Oh, I like our Fiends card on the back. It says designed by the Muslim agorist.
Nice.
Awesome.
Nice. Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
I'll send you the back.
It's a beautiful
thing. Designed by the Muslim agorist. Awesome. Yes.
Tell us who the Muslim agorist is. If
it's a guy named Davi, who I think he's Muslim, apparently, and he's an agorist. He's a good guy. He's a good graphic designer. I worked with him on making this. And it's actually designed by the Muslim agorist and Michael W. Dean. But the back is designed by the Muslim agorist. So there you go. I don't need credit. His name's Davi. And I don't know. You look more Muslim to me than he does. But that's maybe my ethnocentricity or something.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think he's Indian American, you know, from India, or his family might be. He looks more India than you know, you guys.
Than
you towel heads from Iran. They don't even wear towel. What do they wear on their heads in Iran? Hats?
Well, some people wear a towel. I don't know if they're not called towels. But yeah, people wear turbans. Usually it's people who are very religious or, you know, because they're Shiite, they believe some people who have power are direct descendants of the Prophet Muhammad. And those ones you'll know because they're wearing black turbans, and those are reserved specifically for them.
Well, also Jews wear head coverings too. And
yarmulkes. Put on your yarmulke. It's time for
Isn't
Hanukkah.
That something to like remind you that God is always above you? It is in Judaism. Is it the same thing in Islam?
I don't know, man.
Well, I'm going to interview the Muslim agorist for he's on my long list of people to interview for Anarchy Gumbo. I've talked to him about it. I need to interview more women. I don't want to project not to be PC, but there are women into liberty out there, and I don't want to have 90% of my interviews be men and make it look like liberty is a boys club.
Yeah, liberty's not a boys club, but I don't know. It seems like most of our listeners are men between the ages of 18 and 50.
The ones that would be indoctrinated to be suicide bombers in the Middle East. Right. Disaffected men from 18 to 26.
Yeah. I don't really know why that is.
It's a time of life when you don't really know what you're going to do, and you're angry and you're not making as much money as you should, and you might not be getting laid enough, or, you know, I mean, it's angry young men time.
But why men and not women, though? Why do you think?
Because women could get laid anytime they want, no matter what they look like. If they put on a dress and some lipstick and some heels, any woman can walk down the street, any street in the world, and get laid within 10 minutes.
Except for Madeleine Albright.
she probably has Somali slaves to do it for her.
Right. She had them kidnap a few of those Iraqi children that were starving from the sanctions.
She has a few East Germans stashed in her basement from before the wall coming down. It was part of the treaty. They gave her some East Germans.
Right. Oh, man. Way off topic. But yeah. Who cares?
At this point, I'm like, was there a topic?
Yeah. It's the end of the Fiends. This is where we just talk about random
it's
stuff.
The end time of the Fiends. We did two episodes
this is
today.
Interesting
we did,
times.
This is like our fourth hour of podcasting today. And then I'm going to have to go edit one of these and then go work on my DVD and look at it and take notes.
Yeah. I remember those sessions back when we did Guns and Weed. Having to go and watch the same movie over and over again.
Yeah. Try doing it when there's only one person in the movie, though.
Oh, yeah. No, you know, no least, pretty blonde girl to at least be like,
It's a good-looking guy, but it's the same guy. I'm looking at the same guy. There is literally one person in this movie, you know? I mean, there's DJ's voiceover in between the segments going like, you know, shooting on the move. It's kind of cute the way I did it. Like, there's just a title card and her saying it. It kind of looks like an educational movie from grade school, which is intentional.
Right. It's supposed to be an educational movie.
Yeah.
And what's the title? Is there an official title yet, or are you still just working with
It's
title?
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1, Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz. Nice. That's a short, snappy title.
Yeah.
Good so I sent you the back of the dime cards.
All right.
Did you get them?
I haven't. Oh, wow. Yeah, the back's pretty neat. Let's see what it has here.
Got a dime card calculator on it, and it's got a little thing you can scan with your iPhone or something.
Oh, and it's got the little logo there, designed by the Muslim agorist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of course, on the back of the dime, it's got the fascist symbol. But we can't.
Is that the fascist
symbol? We can't
symbol?
Help that. Yeah.
What is that?
It
looks like a stick.
Yeah, the bundle of sticks with an axe head in it.
It's the bundle they whip you with if you're not compliant. Yeah, that is. When you search fascism on Wikipedia, it says this is part of the fascism group of the articles, and it has that image.
Yeah, it's
something like
it's
that.
It's also on the Lincoln Memorial. It's each bottom of his armrest is the fascies, which is that bundle of sticks with the axe head on it.
Look at search fascism on Wikipedia and look at their rendition of the image. It's kind of interesting because it's the stick with the – what's the thing on the side of it? I don't know.
It's an axe head.
Okay, it's an axe head. But if you look at the way they've rendered it on there, the axe head actually looks like a balcony with a tyrant speaking on it.
Oh, huh.
Doesn't it?
I'm just pulling it up now. I'm on my wife's computer.
I mean, it looks like Mussolini speaking on the balcony or something.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know the origin of it, but Ben Quaker actually had a little bit of it on his podcast. And apparently some of the Romans. Oh yeah, there it is. It's a little. It does look kind of like it could be a dais on the sticks. But
is that Roosevelt on the dime? Is that FDR or the other Roosevelt? That's FDR, isn't it?
From the front of the dime. Let me go look at the front now. You got me searching for dimes here.
Yeah, it's FDR, man. Boy, for something that's like for liberty, there's a lot of statism in this. But you know,
sure is, yeah. Well, FDR is the one who stole everyone's gold. It was like, let them use silver.
We're reclaiming it, though. But the Liberty dime, who was on? They make these with Mercury dimes, too, sometimes, which have they have the fascism thing on the back, but they have the god Mercury on the front.
Mm. Well,
it's actually Liberty. It's not Mercury. It's Liberty.
Ah, huh.
Which is a goddess named for representing that existed in many cultures, including the Roman Empire and British Britannia. Some real liberty-oriented empires there. The Roman Empire, where, you know, most people were slaves, or the British Empire, where they could issue letters of marque and let pirates steal your stuff. Mm.
I guess we're co-opting the money back to freedom,
yeah,
ideally. Yeah. Like the N-word or something.
Yeah.
It's okay when we give each other dimes that have fascist symbols on it.
Well, I think I'm tuckered out for liberty here because I have to go edit this unless right, you got more.
No, no.
Unless you got more pee-pee kitty.
No, when I compare silver dimes to the N-word, I think it's about stopping time.
Yeah. Worms. Worms.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I-O-E and that includes endorphins.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every week, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.